it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
To the PHLY Eagles show presented by ButcherBox. ButcherBox is offering our listeners an amazing offer where new users can get free meat plus $20 off your first box. Join today using our link at butcherbox.com/PHLY and use code PHLY to receive this exclusive offer today before time runs out. Welcome to the show, Bo Wolf, Mr. Beef himself, Zach Berman. Zach, how was your day off?
Long time no see, Bo.
Yeah, how you doing?
Long time no see, Julia.
Buckle up, we're going 8 hours today.
Yes. How am I? I'm great. I'm excited for the show. Excited for the week ahead. We got 12 weeks until the start of training camp. 12 weeks of...
How are we going to pass that time?
Yes.
Is what you're thinking to yourself.
Yeah, I was going through
this week will
shows.
Be easy. We'll have a mini camp week. That'll be easy. But yep. those other 10 weeks, brainstorming of different
topics that we can explore.
How quickly did nudity bubble to the top?
Never. That was not a part of it. Nope. Excited to get into this.
I'm excited to get into it as well. I went to the Sixers game last night or yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
Did the game time.
You don't count us as a New Yorker, and you're a Philly guy.
Well, right? I did think it was interesting that all these New Yorkers came in and they were so vocal, and every single one of them was just at the top of their lungs going, Zach, 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 Zach.
Zach Randolph doesn't play for the Knicks anymore. Yes.
But the demand has been made. The people want it. We're going to try to work on a Zach banner t-shirt at some point here, so let's get that for the sickos.
I hope my wife buys it.
I hope so too.
Yes. She was so impressed with you. She kept saying Bo's creativity when I showed her the banner. She didn't say, oh, that's so nice about this. She's like, Bo is so creative. So that was her big takeaway from
Zach,
that.
Zach, Zach, Zach. Yeah, let's go. All right, we have a lot to get to today, Zach. We are at the top. We want to talk a little bit about the Mekhi Becton signing for the Eagles. But before we get to that, or after we get to that, we want to sort of go through, take a scope out of the big picture process, everything that the Eagles did over the course of the weekend, go pick by pick, maybe look at where those guys came on the consensus big board, some options that, like, let's say if they didn't go with these picks in the first three rounds, they could have had these picks. What sort of looks better to you, and just sort of run through the draft class as a whole. But first, the Eagles did make some news yesterday. Tell us about the news and what we know about it.
Yeah, it came out last night. Adam Schefter from ESPN reports that Mekhi Becton is coming to Philly today. He's agreed to terms on a deal pending the physical. Mm. And pending the physical, it does carry some weight there.
Sure.
But a one-year deal.
He carries a lot of weight, that's for sure.
A one-year deal up to $5.5 million. Mekhi Becton was a first-round pick by the New York Jets 4 years ago. He started 31 games in the league, left tackle, right tackle, big prospect, and like physically, big prospect in terms of the draft. I mean, and as it was interesting, Adam's reporting on this said this is one Jeff Stoutland was pushing for. And
second Mekhi on the roster now.
What's that?
Second Mekhi on the roster.
Second Mekhi, that's true. If you remember, for our loyal viewers and loyal listeners, I'm sure you do, Bo and I, after free agency, did or after the first wave of free agency, did like second wave.
Yeah.
Second wave signings that make sense. And Bo singled out Mekhi Becton. And I love the idea.
You talked about him this weekend.
Yeah. And look, he's my type. Anyone who watches this knows a former big time first round pick, right? I like these reclamation projects. If you're of the, I imagine most people watching this are of the opinion that Jeff Stoutland, when he gets a player, he can try to maximize whatever's in that player's body, to use the football term there. And that's what this is. I thought coming out of the draft, outside of right guard, a big area of focus for the Eagles was backup tackle, was the swing tackle spot. If Lane went down, if Jordan Mailata goes down, who steps in? We said Fred Johnson's the top player there. Fred Johnson,
basically the only player.
Yeah, there. And he had a nice camp last year, nice preseason.
Tyler Steen as well.
Tyler Steen as well.
If he doesn't win.
Sure,
you know.
Sure. But Mekhi Becton, like, physically, is what you look for. And now, he was a left tackle, got moved to right tackle. I know there was some resistance on his part being moved to the right side. I would imagine after a free agency cycle that he was not signed. He understands what the role would be. I think even the reporting included that he wants to play for Stoutland, so he probably understands what this could do for his career. This is the perfect swing for the Eagles to take for a backup tackle. Now, do you think he could factor into guard, or just physically is he too big for guard?
I think that's probably overstated. He's 6'7", 363, right? I mean, that would be a big old honking guard. Yeah. But if you're talking about like worst case or emergency situations, I think he could be a factor there. We asked Howie Roseman the question in the post-draft press conference, like, would you have been surprised 5 days ago?
We'll say you. Okay, that's a good question.
That's fine. To not come out of the draft with an offensive lineman earlier than the fifth round. And he said, absolutely. I mean, they signaled that with the guys who they brought in for pre-draft visits, which we know, looking at the class, those were serious players that they were considering. So I'm sure that this was something that you get through the second day of the draft, and you're like, we haven't added an offensive lineman yet. Let's get Mekhi Becton's agent on the phone and tell him this is a thing that we're interested in. Probably good job by Becton to wait out the draft to see where the opportunity lied. But, from an upside standpoint, he's only 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably a short-term marriage, but there is a possibility that if he does become the player that, he looked like he was as a rookie under Jeff Stoutland, that this could be a longer-term thing. And, as opposed to, and we'll go through the draft, how it laid out, it did just sort of turn out that when the Eagles were picking, it happened to be in these like gulfs of when the offensive linemen were going, right? And so there wasn't a time necessarily where it made sense to push a guy to the top of the board. So knowing you had this as a backup makes sense. I think this goes to what we will talk about, that I think generally speaking, process-wise, this was a really, really, really good job by Howie Roseman all weekend long.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think the way you summarized it with Becton makes sense, that this was probably their back pocket idea for this kind of move to happen on the Sunday night after the draft shows you,
right.
All right, if we don't get this tackle in this round, then this is the path they would go. They see the same thing we do in terms of backup swing tackle. They know the importance of that spot. This is not us like enlarging a problem that's not there. They know the value of that spot. They wanted tackles, like you said. It didn't work out that way. And so with Becton, the reason I said the physical is important, he did take a visit to Cincinnati earlier this year. He did not sign. You don't know if it was money. You don't know if it was physical. He missed all of the 2022 season. He had he's had some injuries in the past. The Jets did not pick up his fifth-year option. That's why he's a free agent.
Only played one game in 2021 as well.
Yep. So this is the type of thing where I don't want to overstate it, because when there's a 25-year-old offensive tackle with 30-plus career starts who is 6'7", 350, 360,
was a
first-round pick, and he's available on April 28th, which was last night,
right?
Then either he's looking for too much or the league doesn't think he's a starting player. Either way, I don't think the Eagles are bringing him in to be a starting guard. That would surprise me. I think it's to be their top backup tackle.
Yeah, I mean, the middle outcome here is that he like never plays a game for the Eagles potentially, like whether that's for injury or doesn't make the roster or whatever it is. But the upside here is that he is a starting caliber backup tackle who has played on both sides of the ball. So he's already showed that side flexibility.
Yeah. And look, I don't need to tell you this. Howie Roseman would tell you this. The Eagles won a Super Bowl with a backup left tackle. Right. That's an important spot. And so they've when they haven't had an adequate replacement for Lane Johnson in the past, they've struggled in games. Now, I'm not saying Mekhi Becton is, you know, there's a delta between Johnson and Becton, but I would feel more comfortable with Becton out there at this point than Fred Johnson.
Now, I think if you and I had done this exercise immediately after the draft, we would have said and went through the depth chart. Where are they weakest? Where do they most need help depth-wise? We would have said tackle, I think.
Absolutely.
Now, with this done, where does your attention go? What still needs to be done, do you think?
Well, it depends what you think of linebackers. Like, if you think Devin White, if you're confident in Devin White for this year, and if you think Jeremiah Trotter Jr. and Ben Van Sumer and Oren Burks are fine there, right, then... Yeah, it's just the way the Eagles view linebacker. I don't think they were going into this draft looking for a starting linebacker. So linebacker is probably their weakest spot. I would say right guard's their biggest need. I asked Howie Roseman after the draft about the outlook at right guard. He mentioned Tyler Steen, but he certainly did not endorse Tyler Steen as like the no-doubt starter. He said they brought in some guys who played. That's basically just Matt Hennessy.
Right.
And then he said they're always looking. He said they're not sitting at the pool this week. They're going to be looking. So maybe it's a Dalton Risner type, right? Maybe they do something like that. Maybe they're scanning the trade market, or they just want to see how Steen looks this offseason. Been wrong in the past with, you know, last year I thought there was gonna be a competition with Juergens and Steen. There was not a competition with Juergens and Steen. Juergens was the guy from day one, and he never relinquished that. I would imagine going in the camp that Steen is the big time favorite.
Yeah.
But that it's not as set in stone perhaps as Juergens was last year. Now, when I did that 15-step guide to Howie Roseman's offseason, one thing I said is give Steen an opportunity to win that job. And I think you should. He was a third-round pick. All the reasons they liked him a year ago should, in theory, still be applicable. Now, they saw him as... I trust Brandon Thorne with this stuff far more than my own judgment. Brandon Thorne said, when we spoke to him, left tackle to right guard in particular is a big transition. But he also said like he didn't see something on film last year to say that, all right, Steen should be the guy. So that to me is the biggest spot on the roster where they could use help.
Now, we will spend a day later this week sort of going through the undrafted players who the Eagles have reportedly brought in, and we'll sign later this week ahead of rookie minicamp next week. But some interesting names there. We can talk a little bit more about them as the week goes on. But they've addressed some of those positions where you might think that they need some competition depth-wise. I do think linebacker is probably the answer. And like it's kind of why I think that I think Jeremiah Trotter is going to start games for the Eagles this year.
And based on talent later, or based on injury?
Both.
Okay.
And we'll get to that. I know you are dying for a Devontae Parker replacement.
No. Here, let me ask you this, though, because do you think, and I know we're going to get to it, but because you brought it up, of those fifth-round picks, Trevor Keegan or Jeremiah Trotter, who's more likely to start this year?
Jeremiah Trotter.
Okay. You don't think Trevor Keegan can push to be the right guard?
I mean, I think he could.
But you think Trotter is a better entry point.
Okay. But I think you're right that both of those guys have potential shots. And we'll see how it goes. All right. We're going to get into the pick-by-pick analysis here. But before we do that, it's time to talk about our friends at Bet Parks. Now, Sixers, I think 5.5-point favorites heading into the game last night. Hopefully you didn't bet on them. But there's another game coming up tomorrow night. Maybe you believe in them more than most. Maybe more than they deserve to be believed in. But... either way, you can get the Bet Parks app and get in the zone with the Bet Parks Sportsbook app because the money is in the moments. Win big with all-day action, and you can win your first $10 bet and earn $125 in sports bonus bets. You play for fun. You love to win. You bet. Download the app and play along with us. Must be 21 or older. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-522-4700. 1-800-GAMBLER.
I've been hearing about some of our colleagues here who are doing some great social media posts about Olipop. And I got to tell you, I'm spending my time trying to get the best, you know, gut health I can. So I'm not on social talking about it. I'm drinking it because it's the world's first functional soda with a classic soda taste and the benefits of plant-based fiber.
You're about walking the walk, not talking the talk.
Prebiotics and other botanical ingredients to support gut health. Olipop is a new kind of soda with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar and 9 grams of fiber per can. I'll be transparent with the audience. I'm not typically a big soda guy, right? Maybe when I was younger, but not typically a big soda guy. But I was in the mood for soda the other day, and I was thinking about like a diet root beer, and then I said, you know what? I can just have an Olipop, because Olipop has the like classic root beer type taste. They have so many types of good flavors: vintage cola, classic root beer, orange squeeze, classic grape, strawberry vanilla, cream soda, and cherry cola. They also have a Dr. Pepper type that's called Dr. Goodwin, and a brand new Sprite type with lemon lime flavor. Use the code PHLY for 20% off your next Olipop order. This discount only applies to one-time orders, not to subscription orders. Olipop is sold online, drinkolipop.com, or you can go to Amazon. And it's available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, especially Wawa, but also Target, Sprouts, Wegman, ShopRite, and GoPuff.
Hey, Zach, before we get into the Quinyon Mitchell pick, what were your takeaways from the press conference on Saturday night? Because we talked for about 13 hours, but we were done before that press conference.
Yeah, first thing that's worth discussing is what happened before it, because it was intentional, right? And it was a nice gesture by Howie Roseman. That Howie always starts his Saturday press conferences, when I say Saturday night of the draft press conferences, by saying, I just want to thank everyone here, all the scouts, all the coaches, all the analytics, administration, the kitchen staff, he'll mention, they're all here, and they're the ones who are all kind of behind the scenes. So Howie's done this for a long time, and what he did was he brought everyone down to the auditorium for one big photo op. Right now, was it I don't know what the right word is here. It was performative in the sense like he wanted everyone to see that, right? Yeah. But I thought it was a nice gesture, and especially, look, we talk about like the scouts, we talk about the assistant coaches, but there are you got to think like the kitchen staff, they're there all hours working there, right? The security staff, I'm leaving our show at 11:30 or whatever, driving to NovaCare. I can't just get in, right? There's security people working there throughout all around the clock. So there's a lot of people the PR staff, exactly. There's a lot that goes into it besides Howie and Nick who are on the lectern. So two things there. I thought it was a nice gesture by Howie to do it. But also when you just see the volume of people, it really brings home how much goes in to the draft, like how many people are involved in this.
Yeah, I thought it was nice. It was a mass of humanity up there on the stage.
Now, if I can kind of pick your brain here a bit.
Okay, pick away.
We have said this. In a previous life, you worked for the team.
I did.
And you were there on draft days. And from my understanding, okay, because we mentioned the kitchen staff, that the draft night meal is one of the best meals on the calendar.
Yes.
Is that, can you kind of...
It's actually what I looked forward to more was the Saturday morning brunch spread.
You're a big breakfast guy. Okay.
I'm a breakfast guy, but that was a better thing. They had a nice lock set up.
Oh, okay.
The lobster and steak is more for the draft room itself, not for everybody.
Okay. Yeah. All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, because I've always heard like the Thursday night meal.
Yeah,
that's more
that's more for the real people making decisions, not for everybody.
Okay. All right. Well, in any, I thought that was a nice call out to the kitchen staff. Okay. So as far as the actual press conference, shout out to our listeners and viewers, the sickos out there. In the chat, someone said, who are the Red Star players this year? Or did they draft any Red Star players? So a question straight from the chat to Howie Roseman. Last year you made a big deal about the Red Stars. Did anyone fit that description this year? And he actually pulled out a text from his college staff, and he counted it there. They had five players that were Red Star players, as Bo's described in the past. This is their Red Star is someone who they think exemplifies what they look for. There's different. It's kind of ambiguous, but they say team captain, football character, measurables like performance, a few different factors.
Yeah.
And what the Red Star is basically is they all kind of put, I think every scout or as the room, they pick one guy out, right? And that's their Red Star. Excuse me. So he said they had five this year. He did not name who. I tried asking who. He said, come on. But in his answer, he said he talked about Will Shipley, the 4.0 GPA. So I imagine Will Shipley was one of them because he was in the answer. So they drafted five Red Stars. And the story behind this is how he said, and it's a convenient narrative, but after the way last year ended, one thing that they were really focused on this season, this offseason, was like this football character, the chip on their shoulder, a certain type of personality. So it sounded like that was an emphasis of theirs.
Yeah, do you find that as an overcorrection or trying to like retrofit a narrative too much?
Maybe so. I mean, clearly, I'm not saying there was an issue in the locker room last year, but when you hear Nick Sirianni talking about like there's a core value that they kind of got away from, and then you hear Howie Roseman say they're really emphasizing football character, you think that the way last season ended, maybe they wanted a little more like accountability or dog, you know. You know,
they did a good job not drafting Matt Patricia as defensive coordinator this weekend.
I think I don't want to overstate it, right? Because like you said, it is a convenient narrative. But I guess the one sentence summation is I think they want people who might be a little more pissed off. If that makes sense.
Because you know it's always...
It's better to be pissed off than pissed on. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I've worked with you for 5 years now. I know that expression well.
Anything else from the from Nick and Howie that stood out?
Well, they went player through player, which we can talk about when we discuss the players. We mentioned the right guard. As far as... Was there anything else? Because there was a lot of...
No, I mean, the offensive line thing was the big takeaway to me, but we already talked about that. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I asked Howie like if he learned anything about Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore, since we still haven't spoken to him, like going through this process with them. And he really didn't. He was just like, I mean, I know these guys. Like, I've been around. Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, but that's the whole point is you knew him from afar. Now you went through this like actual real process with them. Yeah. Did you learn anything? No, nothing.
So. I also think your question to Nick about the about learning anything in the basketball, it was a good question, but it's
didn't
kind of
anything.
It was the final confirmation for me that something that I'm kind of ruining or that I miss, and that storyteller Nick has kind of gone out the door a bit.
Oh.
Yeah, Nick's first and second year, he was big time storyteller mode. He loved telling stories, and now I get along great with Nick.
Nick. He's been browbeating you.
But Nick is kind of more into like generic coach mode now. And it's kind of been the past year and a half that you've seen that. There's been fewer of these stories and more of the generic coach talk.
Why do you think that is?
Probably the criticism that he might have endured.
Yeah.
Or maybe maybe they say you give too much. I don't know. I actually don't think he gives too much. But I think like part of Nick likes to say he's a good storyteller, right?
Yeah.
You're getting fewer and fewer of these storytellers. He used to regale us with some of these stories.
We didn't talk about this as a show prep thing, but I want to ask you about it. I love, and we talk about like we're analyzing the process from the team standpoint, but we like the celebration of the players is really great, and they have all worked so hard to get here. And I will soak up and watch every single of the phone call videos from around the league. Love them, like the Rams one where Jared Verse comes in for Brandon Fiske. I'm crying. That's great. All that good stuff. What was your favorite of the Eagles versions? Got to be Trotter, right?
Yeah. Well, look, Jeffrey Lurie calling or speaking to Jeremiah Trotter, saying, you know, how long have I known you? I've known you. Two, three, 4 years old, and then said, congratulations to your father, and I loved your mother.
Mm-hmm.
That was touching.
And he was getting choked up.
Sure. I mean, that's that. For those who don't know, we said it on the show. Jeremiah Trotter's mother, Tammy, passed away last year, in February of 2023. So yeah, so that was touching to see, because it was, I do think it was genuine. And like Jeffrey, I mean, the owner part aside, he does know these guys, and especially someone like Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Someone like Jeremiah Trotter, who is an Eagles Hall of Famer, was in the organization for a long time, and it is something that you kind of forget. Like, you know, someone has a kid when he's on the team with you, and then you see that person grow up.
Sure.
It's kind of like, in a certain respect, you think of like your friends growing up and their parents, and now they see you now in like the roles you have.
I mean, if it's like when I'm covering the Eagles in 25 years and Reed Berman is the
yeah,
GM.
But like I have, you know, some of the people who I went to high school with, like, you know, their parents, when they watch my stuff, like when they read my stuff, like you know, shout out to Mr. Vernon, right? Like it's I appreciate, you know, you appreciate because they saw you when you were, you know, 8 years old, 10 years old, 15, 18, right? And so similarly, Jeffrey Lurie's like seen Jeremiah Trotter Jr. from the time this guy was 3 years old, and now he's drafting him. It's a pretty special moment. And that's why I talked about, like, there is that sentimentality attached to some of these
sure.
picks, and you have to remove that. But then when it does happen,
yeah, it's nice.
You can't ignore it. Like, you can't just say, like, oh, this is the player. This is prospect number 54, right? No, this is a person with a background and a family.
My favorite subtle moment of like maybe half comedy of the videos was the Johnny Wilson call, and how he's on the phone with Johnny Wilson. He's like, "You remember me?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "And what did we do together?" And I'm like, "I'm waiting for this. What is this? Like, you know, were they playing basketball? Were they like rolling dice or whatever?" And Johnny Wilson's like, we walked around the field. Like, yes. Oh, okay.
Yes.
And then there's another in the Aeneas Smith video. He references it too. Like,
thing.
We're gonna have more walks around the field together.
Yes.
Like, okay. Tra la la.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Now, what did you? Now you were kind of undersold about the Will Shipley call.
Yeah, I would say as a connoisseur of these videos and like being willing to be bought in on any player based on their reaction. The Will Shipley video was probably the least inspiring of any that I've ever seen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
I kind of disagree with you. I'm empathetic there, because I actually do the same. Like, I do the same thing where I'll like always introduce myself. Like, hi, I'm, you know, and so Howie Roseman calls and he says, "Hey, this is Howie Roseman." He says, "Hi," and the guy says, "Hi, this is Will Shipley."
Right.
Like, and Howie's like, "I know, I called you."
Right.
And I'll do the same thing that, like, if I'm, you know, if I'm meeting someone, I'll always like introduce myself.
Yeah.
And the person's like, "Yeah, I know who you are." Yeah. So.
Well, that's okay. But it was beyond that. It was
okay.
Just like, I didn't, there wasn't like excitement, personality. Like, yeah, people are talking about the "What Up, Big Pimpin'"
from Taylor
Tunz, which is very funny. So
yes.
I didn't get it from
you didn't get it from
Mr. Shipley.
Okay.
That's okay.
Very professional, very buttoned up.
Yeah. So yeah, sir, Mr. Ducksworth. Okay.
Great Mighty Ducks reference there.
There you go.
All right, let's get to the players.
All right, let's talk about how the weekend unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it started at 22 with Quinyon Mitchell. Now, pick 22, this was the number 11 player on the Arif Hasan consensus draft board, the number 11 player on Dane Brugler's board, the number 12 player on Daniel Jeremiah's board. So if you're looking at, like, percentage of where it came, it's the Eagles' best value of the draft.
Okay.
And I think that everything that Howie Roseman was able to do over the course of the weekend, the maneuvering, which we can talk about, which I think probably was his best maneuvering of the draft board that I can remember, began with him being patient enough to stay at 22 and not move up, because that allowed him to then trade up for Cooper DeJean after that. And so from a process standpoint, it sounds probably harder, or it sounds easier than it probably was for him to just be like, oh, you sit at 22 and you can do the math and that these guys are coming and that's easy. But we know that he's got an itchy trigger finger. He probably wanted to move up, and maybe it would have been for Quinyon Mitchell. But I think staying there, staying patient was the key to everything that followed. And then in terms of the actual player, we can talk about that in a second, him versus Terry Arnold. But from a process standpoint, I think it all started there.
I would agree with you, although what it suggests to me is that they didn't feel there was much of a difference between Quinyon Mitchell or Terry Arnold.
I agree with you.
They would have been happy with either one of them.
I agree with you.
Yeah, so that, and that's the only reason you do it. If you think one is clearly better, then you're saying, yeah, we'll attach a fifth-round pick to move up two spots, right, or a spot or something like that, like they did with Devontae Smith or like they did with Jalen Carter.
You flip a second for a third.
Yeah. I do think the process was sound there. Now, the rest of the league helped. But Howie didn't just trade for the sake of trading. It wasn't like Howie said, we need to get player X, and we will do what it takes to get player X. So I agree with you there in terms of the process.
But I do think it's instructive, like you just said, that they didn't view Quinyon Mitchell as necessarily a tier above Terry Arnold, maybe even Cooper DeJean, maybe even Troy Fautanu, maybe Tyler Guyton. That would be sort of what I would guess was their level there.
Yeah, because we did, appropriately so, make the distinct, like, they chose Quinyon Mitchell over Terry Arnold, and they did, and those two will be linked, but they didn't think one was clearly superior to the other, or else they would have moved up to get one.
Now, from a offensive line, like, we'll do this for the first few picks, because them not coming out of the draft with an offensive lineman in the first four rounds, who could they have taken? The next one here, for the Eagles, I think, would have been Tyler Guyton. Mm-hmm. You're fine with them obviously passing on Guyton in favor of Quinyon.
I am, yes. Yeah. And that too goes back to my thought, and I'm not an O-line expert, but that Tyler Guyton's a tackle-only prospect, and I would have liked more the tackle guard versatility in the first round, unless it was Mims.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, we've talked about Quinyon Mitchell. We'll I'm sure talk plenty more about him in the months ahead, but let's get to number two, Cooper DeJean. The Eagles trade up to 40. And Cooper DeJean, by the consensus big board, number 23 overall. So that's a 17-pick advantage. He's 27 on Dane Brugler's list, 24th on Daniel Jeremiah's list. The guys who go after him are Kool-Aid McKinstry, Jackson Powers-Johnson, Edgerrin Cooper, I think, would have been the players the Eagles might have been interested in. From an offensive line standpoint, this was sort of a, like, they had missed the run, and then there was another little run that was to come. So it's Jackson Powers-Johnson. Zach Frazier goes a little bit later. Patrick Paul later than that. So they're not going offensive line there. And obviously they trade up for Cooper DeJean. DeJean.
Yeah, DeJean. Cooper DeJean.
We're going to have to get this sorted out.
Okay.
This is tough. Anyway, this is what it's all about. Like, we'll talk about all these other players, but the draft is going to hinge on how this duo performs in the secondary. And I do think that you would probably rather have two players graded as first-round players on your board and a late third-rounder than a first-rounder and two players who were graded as second-rounders on your board.
I agree with you there. One thing we did was our favorite pick and our least favorite pick, right? And DeJean was my favorite pick because of the value that you were getting. I think I thought he would have been a worthy pick at 22. Some people were talking about him as a potential, like, few pick trade down. I thought he was value at 22. So to get him where they did, I liked it. The alternative that I looked at is, all right, 50 and 53 are two value. You know, they moved up in the second, moved down in the third. What would it have been if they stayed at 50 and 53? And honestly, I'm not sure that I love.
It didn't turn out to be a really good board there.
Exactly. Kingsley would have been someone that I would have considered. But there wasn't really a, look, if McKinstry
if I had to
fallen,
guess, if I had to guess if they had just stayed. Now, I don't think they would have stayed, like how it would have just moved up a little bit further for somebody else. But judging by what the board would be at, I think you're looking at, you know, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, and Jalix Hunt, or Quinyon Mitchell, and I would say Michael Hall, and either Roger Rosengarten or Kingsley Suamataia.
Now, the one caveat there, or like the nuanced part of this, is by trading down from the third, they were able to get the assets to use.
Absolutely.
So you can't, if they drafted at 50 and 53, then yes. But I imagine even if they stuck at 50, they would have traded down from 53 to try to get the flexibility.
I think you're right.
So that
in which case it probably would have been Rosengarten or Suamataia.
I agree with you there. And that would have been a worthy discussion because tackle's important. But I just think the value of the gene's too strong. I'm high on the gene, higher than my brother Alex for sure.
What does Alex not like about him?
I don't want to speak for Alex here, but Alex is just curious whether he can play like outside corner. Mm. So,
it's not a race thing.
No, definitely not a race. Well, I don't think it's a race thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Jalix Hunt. Well, you know what? Let's talk about the other sort of sliding door scenarios, because that's one is if they don't move up from 50-53. Another is what if they had moved up for Dallas Turner? If they hadn't been patient to sit at 22 and had moved up to call it 16 for Dallas Turner, you're then looking at something like, and I'm guessing that would have taken a second, the trade that you had proposed, a second for a third, basically, to move up. So would you rather have what the Eagles ended up with in the first three rounds, or would you rather have, call it Dallas Turner, Roger Rosengarten, and if you're lucky, Andrew Phillips? And if you're unlucky, it's probably like Kyrie Jackson or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Because the corner run, they would have really missed out on the corner run.
I mean, I got to tell you, like, I think Dallas Turner's going to be a special player.
I do love Dallas Turner.
I probably would lean toward Dallas Turner. I think that, but I like getting two first rounders instead of one, because if you consider Mitchell and DeGene both first rounders. But your bet's better, I think, with a top 10 player compared to two top 20 players, maybe. I don't fault them for it, but yeah, being aggressive for Turner is a move I probably would have wanted to make.
Okay, one more for you. Mm-hmm. Let's say they had moved up to 19 to take Troy Fautanu. So let's, and then again, it's just a small slide down in the second round. So what the Eagles ended up with, or Troy Fautanu, and I'm going to tempt you here because I'm going to say Mike Sanra still.
Yeah.
And Jonah Ellis.
I like what the Eagles ended up with because I really like the gene. Like when we were talking about that slight trade up, I didn't think the gene was going to be available early second round. So it goes back to your initial question. By them being disciplined with Mitchell, they're able to get the gene. If they trade it up for, they're not going to trade up. I shouldn't say never, but if they trade up in the first round, I don't think they trade up in the second as well. First off, you're operating with a dearth of picks at that point. And you just have less flexibility. So I like the Mitchell, the Gene combo, especially compared to a slight trade for Fautanu.
Okay.
Although I do wonder if you knew you were getting a corner round two. I like double dipping on the defensive backs, and I think the Gene's versatility helps you there. But if you knew you're getting a corner round two, do you want to be a little more aggressive round one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you, what signal do you take of DeGene getting to 40 in the first place?
Good question, because the league's speaking there. And, you know, I don't put too much on it because there weren't corners really taken over him, right? So if it's a situation where there's like three or four corners who you think DeGene's better than, who are taking over him, then that would make me worried.
I think it's pretty much just at the end of the first round, Baltimore taking Nate Wiggins.
Yeah, exactly. Him, right? So at that point, no, I think it was just the way the board fell. I thought he was going to go earlier in the second round. What it did surprise me, if I'm being honest, is that teams didn't feel compelled to trade up from the second round. Now, maybe there were fewer teams willing to move out of their spots. Certainly the Eagles had more ammo. Being able to offer 50 and 53 is better than a team, you know, offering a second and third or something like that, mm-hmm. right? But I didn't read as much into it as I would with a player falling and other guys being drafted above him. Like A.D. Mitchell, for instance, when you see a handful of other receivers taken above him, then you start, you know, Keon Coleman's taken above him.
Vlad McConkey.
Yeah, Ricky Purcell, right?
Jalen Polk.
Yeah, so then you're saying, like, all right, is there something here that we, the public, doesn't know? But in Cooper DeJean's case, I didn't find that to be...
And somebody brings it up in the chat, you know, Nolan Smith. We probably had the exact same conversation about them getting him at 30 last year. And I do think that's a fair comparison. Like,
yeah.
It's a very similar situation. I think you hope it turns out a little bit better in year one, but there's reason to be clear-eyed about the fact that you didn't just get another first-round pick.
I agree.
But I think it makes a lot of sense for this roster in particular.
Agree. Now, the one thing I'll say is DeJean had much better college production than Nolan Smith. I think Nolan Smith, you were betting on traits more so than you were with DeJean, even though DeJean's considered a really good athlete. One of the knocks on him is, does he have like the hip flexibility, for instance, to play on the outs, to play man-to-man coverage, that kind of thing, right? So I think with Nolan Smith, you were betting on the athlete a little more than with Cooper DeJean, you're betting a little more on the player.
Well, the Eagles are, Zach, trying to build a nice foundation in the secondary with Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell. And I'll tell you what, if you want to build yourself a nice foundation with a new home, well, you're going to need a mortgage. And who's going to help you out with that? Our friends at Mortgage CS. Mortgage CS offering refinancing options, including rate and term refinances for a rate or payment reduction, or cash out refinances to tap into home equity, making it a smart choice for those with high interest debt or funding home projects or education. The spring purchase market, it's basically here, people, and it's heating up quickly. So many of their clients are reaching out. They say they want to be ready for when the rates drop. But this is what everybody is doing, given limited inventory and strong demand. Competition will remain extremely fierce this year. So get in touch with our friends at Mortgage CS to help prepare you and ensure that you will be able to stand out and make the strongest offers possible. Mortgage CS, what does that CS stand for? Cooper Sharp. Oh, come on. No, it's concierge service, because it's white glove service. They're going to walk you through every single step of the mortgage process, and they're licensed coast to coast, from California, Colorado, D.C., Delaware, and Florida to Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Virginia, and Washington. When you hear the word mortgage, think of Mortgage CS. Think of Ben and Alec. Save Ben's telephone number, 267-391-7425, to your phone. Email Ben at ben@mortgagecs.com. Call or text him any time of day or night. Talk Philly sports if you want. See what he thinks of the Cooper DeJean pick. Check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY to get started. The advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS ID 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com for more information.
When I get home today, there's going to be a box waiting for me on the doorstep, and it's going to be from ButcherBox. I got the email last night that it's coming today, and I can't wait, because ButcherBox, you get incredible deals on premium and cuts from ButcherBox, deals that are good, they're hard to come by at the grocery store. You can get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust, 100% grass fed beef, which is what I'm getting. There's free range organic chicken, pork raised crate free, and wild caught seafood, humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. And I mentioned the convenience, it's delivered right to your doorstep. Free shipping always, curated to customized box plans. And I talked about the incredible value. There's a variety of high quality cuts at that value, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, guides, tips, and hacks. ButcherBox is offering our listeners an amazing offer where new users get free meat plus $20 off your first box. Join today using our link, butcherbox.com/PHLY, and use code PHLY. Receive this exclusive offer today before time runs out.
All right, Zach, round three, the Eagles trade down a few times, and this is their biggest reach against the consensus board.
Yeah.
Jalix Hunt at 94 on the consensus board was 139. That's exactly where he was on Dane Brugler's board. Now, Daniel Jeremiah had him at 64 on his board. So I'm willing to buy the idea that he was lower on the consensus boards because he's a guy from a small school. I don't think it's materially different, but that's where he goes. By just pick number and also by the percentage. This is their biggest reach of the draft against the consensus board. You're looking at other players who went in the range after that who might have appealed to the Eagles. Dwayne Carter, the Duke defensive tackle. Peyton Wilson, they could have taken the North Carolina State linebacker. Troy Franklin, the wide receiver from Oregon. Jatavion Sanders, the tight end from Texas. And then if you're talking offensive line, like, could this have been the time when they addressed that? Tanner Bordellini goes, you know, about 15, 20 picks later, the Wisconsin interior offensive lineman, Layden Robinson from Texas A&M, Javon Foster, the tackle from Missouri. What do you make of the Jalix Hunt process?
Yeah, this was my least favorite pick, and I like the process involved because I like the multiple trade backs. The multiple trade backs allowed them to be in position to get a 3, 4, and 5 in 2025, which I thought was outside of the draft picks. Like, I thought that was the big story of this draft was the Eagles getting those picks for next year, and it just gives them flexibility in terms of not just picks next year, but if they want to make trades, now they have more.
I think that's an important point.
Yeah, now they have more options to trade. And they wouldn't have been able to do it if they just stuck and pick, whether it was at 53 or even when they traded back, right? They traded back twice in the third round in order to get those assets in the fourth round at the Dust trading. And so Howie did a good job navigating it. Now, you mentioned the guys who were on the board. I love edge rushers. I've mentioned that before, and I see the upside with Hunt. But like I said on the show the other day, I think that's a bet that I would rather take in day three. Then I still think you can get a guy in the third round who has upside and can also help you sooner. So position agnostic there. Troy Franklin and Josh Sanders are two guys. Like I said that night, if I was doing the shadow draft like you were, that's what would have jumped out to me. From an offensive line perspective, Tanner Bordellini, I would have wished there was more tackles there that would jump.
Right.
It was a tough time for tackles. But I would say Bordellini, Franklin, or Sanders. That said, and I'm guilty of this, the small school guys I don't know as well. I tend to lean toward bigger school players. If I'm taking someone from Houston Christian, I probably want to see, like, you know, 13, 15 sacks as opposed to 7.5 sacks, right? But I see the tools. I see the appeal, and there's people who really know this who you know, pushed him up their board because of these traits. And like Howie said, they didn't know if he was going to get to them. The last thing I'll say on this is just like Professor Selman says, this wasn't the only year to get an offensive tackle. Like, if you're looking for that edge rusher who's going to contribute in 2025 and 2026, next year's a loaded edge rusher class. You're going to start to see mock drafts for 2025, and you're going to see sometimes edge rushers projected number one. You might be seeing 7, 8 edge rushers in the first round. I think that they'll be able to get someone over Hunt pretty quickly here. So, but that's kind of my objection to the pick.
I think this is probably the pick with the widest range of outcomes, right? I mean, there is a real chance that he is just a special teams player for 3 years and doesn't even make it through the end of his rookie contract. That's a possibility for a 23-year-old who has, you know, as you said, doesn't have a ton of sack production in his 2 years as a pass rusher at Houston Christian. You would have liked to see a little bit more. You can also buy the narrative of why there's more to come here because it's new. He's new to the body. It's new to the position. Pass rush refinement will go a long way. Like, there is not a track record, a ton of guys with his wingspan, with his measurables. Like, you buy it. There's also the upside of, like, if he turns into the third best pass rusher on your team as a third round pick, that's a great outcome.
Agreed.
And that's not crazy to expect. And we talked about over the course of the weekend, like, The timeline here for him fits well with the timeline that the Eagles need because they give him a year of development when you don't need him to be a part of the defensive rotation. Then maybe next year he can join that rotation when they're presumably losing Josh Sweat and Brandon Graham, and you can still draft a guy ahead of him, but he would still be in the rotation at that point, right? So I get it. I think it's an interesting pick. It would not have been the pick I would have made on, you know, in the shadow draft, but I get it. What do you make of basically the entire draft, guys who they already signaled their interest in, like the lack of obfuscation from the Eagles throughout the draft process, like Jalix Hunt, Ania Smith, Johnny Wilson, these are guys they brought in for pre-draft visits. Same with the first two picks. What do you make of that from a process standpoint?
Well, that they weren't more clandestine about it.
Yeah.
Or that, look, I mean, that's, I always like when things are transparent.
Right, they're giving us, it's like an open book test.
Sure.
Right?
But by rule, like I like getting more information on players, guys that you like. You know, there were some guys who they talked to them, like your boy Dylan McMahon. They spoke to at the Shrine Bowl. They haven't spoken to him since, right? So there you're kind of just going based off tape and a profile. There's two ways of looking at it. Maybe you get overly influenced when you bring someone in. Sometimes there's a reason, whether it's injury or off the field. But yeah, you want to make informed bets. So I don't object to it, but I see your point about you're kind of signaling to the league. Like the league knows now X percent of your draft picks were guys you brought in.
Yeah, I think I have come around on the Hunt pick a little bit more than I did on draft night.
Okay.
Just because like the other options there, those guys probably don't offer as much upside as he does, especially position wise. But we will see how it turns out. It's definitely the biggest, you know, bust is too strong of a word, but the biggest chance of not hitting pick equity. All right, round four, we know that they traded two picks to get a first-round pick. I mean, that's great process.
Yes.
It really is. Like, they deserve credit for that. But the actual pick itself, Will Shipley, 127 overall. He was 124 on the consensus board, 118 for Brugler, 92 for Daniel Jeremiah. So value-wise, it makes sense there. Next few picks, this was sort of in the middle of a run on running backs. Ray Davis, Isaac Arendo, Braylon Allen all go in that range. Jared Wiley, the TCU tight end. Jaden Hicks, the safety from Washington State. And then offensive line, this was again in the middle of like a chasm of no offensive linemen going. Cedric Van Pran Granger and Hunter Norzad are like the only two that got picked in the next 30 picks. So if you want to say they should have taken an offensive lineman, it probably wasn't coming here. Shipley is probably my least favorite pick.
Okay.
I don't necessarily love the Trevor Keegan pick either, but because it comes later and they needed offensive line, just from a there were running backs that I liked more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love the player as much, but I do like he's a young player. He fits a specific role for the offense. I get getting talked into it. I don't hate the pick. It's just I would have rather had other running backs than him.
Sure. Look, that's a matter of taste there. I like Braylon Allen more. I said that my one concern with Braylon Allen, like I said, is his production waned his third year when he went into more of a shotgun offense, right? And I shouldn't say waned, it just wasn't as much production. But you know, was he the right fit here for the Eagles? I think Shipley is going to be their number two running back this year over Gainwell.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, just
have you met Nick Sirianni?
Quite a bit. Yeah, I've met Nick Sirianni. Mm-hmm. And I like Gainwell, but I think what you're hoping Gainwell was going to be, I think Shipley could give you that. In particular, I think Eagles fans are going to see when he's catching the ball that he's more. I thought Gainwell was going to be more of a threat catching the ball out of the backfield than he's become. I think Shipley can be that. You mentioned the age with Shipley. Like this was a three-year guy who was productive. You had the great stat about production relative to the other backs on Clemson.
For those of you who weren't watching all weekend, I like to separate out yards per carry for the player versus the yards per carry of all of his running back teammates mm-hmm. who have gotten at least 30 carries over the course of their career. And he's like the only one of the top 10, 15 running backs in this class who was exactly the same as his other teammates. And so there was no differentiation when he had the ball versus his teammates. And that's, I don't love that.
Okay.
And just to be fair, like having gone through all the Pro Bowlers over the past 12 years, it is rare that those guys turn into that level of player. They're only a handful.
Okay. Fair. And look, that's a fair point. I just think Shipley, I think he can play and I think he can help you in different ways. And I think he's a guy who can have a role in the backfield because of the different ways you can use him. He was so effective as a return guy. That's not a reason that you take someone. But to me, that shows athleticism. That shows vision. I think there are tools that you can work with Shipley. And he's 21 years old. So I like that pick more than most. Braylon Allen, I like more as a running back, but I do think scheme might have factored into that.
Now, we'll talk about the shadow draft on tomorrow's show, but for this pick, I would have had Austin Booker, and I think it's an interesting comparison of Austin Booker in the fourth versus Jalix Hunt in the third because they're similar type players, projects on the edge. Booker is 2 years younger. You know, he had 8 sacks at Kansas in 1 year there versus, you know, 7 and 6.5 sacks at Houston Christian.
Has measurables?
Yeah. The measurables are extremely similar. Booker's 6'4.5", 253. And Jalix Hunt is 6'3¾", 252. Now, Jalix Hunt has longer arms. That's really the big difference. But I would like to bet on Booker there rather than Hunt in the third.
I would not object.
All right, we're getting towards the end here, so let's go a little bit quicker towards the rest of these picks. But
shows go fast.
These shows do go fast. I mean, we, when you don't have 8 hours to get through, there's so much. Fifth round, Ania Smith, Jeremiah Trotter, Trevor Keegan. By the consensus picks, Ania Smith was a bit of a reach. He goes 152 versus 174 on the consensus board. Jeremiah Trotter is a big steal, relatively speaking, 155. Is his pick 66, or rather 89 on the consensus big board. So that's a difference of 66, a percentage of like 42.6, which would be the second biggest to Quinyon Mitchell in the draft class. And then Trevor Keegan goes 172 overall relative to 194 on the consensus board. So a 22 pick, quote unquote, reach. But obviously the later you go, the less those numbers matter because, you know, Arif doesn't have all these draft boards, not everybody goes 300 deep. It's a little bit different. And the later you go, everybody's boards are going to look different.
Yeah. So in this group, Smith, you're really gambling. It seems like he's someone that they liked a lot, right? And hearing Nick Sirianni describe it, Sirianni gave the anecdote. I suppose he does tell stories sometimes where he watched him for the first time, went to Howie's office, and he liked this player. He doesn't jump out to you from
a measurable perspective. I can't wait to walk around the field with that guy.
He doesn't jump out to you from a measurable perspective. Doesn't jump out to you from a like big time production perspective. I think that, I mean, you referenced Malik Washington. There are other slots there who might jump out. You're kind of judging their ability to evaluate wide receivers, but I was a little underwhelmed by that pick.
I mean, around a 4.55 at his pro day, right? So that's the question is it, does the explosiveness on tape, is it actually going to look that way in the NFL? That's the bet they're making.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they loved the guy. Yeah, they brought him in. I would bet that he was maybe one of the Red Star guys just because of the degree to which that they were attached to him throughout the pre-draft process. You know, I would have preferred Malik Washington, but you're picking nits. And in terms of like the positions you're adding, the role you're adding, they needed some competition at wide receiver. I would say one knock on him from the Eagles' standpoint is, like, offensively, is this, like, if he's a Lamide Zaccheaus, is Jalen Hurts ever going to throw him the ball? Like, this type of player, right? So, just a thing to think about.
Fair enough.
And then, Trotter. Yeah. I think that's probably, you know, Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeGene are the more important picks. They're their best picks. But, like, process-wise, value-wise, I think Jeremiah Trotter has a chance to be the best pick beyond the second round for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you talked about N'Kobe Dean, T.J. Edwards, that type of comp, if you're telling me you're getting a smart, productive player who, is 21 years old, and if the knock on him is that he doesn't have the size or speed, we've discussed it at linebacker. I care a lot about, like, proven production at that position, and he has proven production at that position.
And then Trevor Keegan, just from a... I think that Trevor Keegan has a good chance to be and no shot on Julian Vandervelde, who had a good career, but the Julian Vandervelde to Dylan McMahon's Jason Kelce. Not that McMahon's going to be Kelce, but just he was taken ahead of him at the same position, and I have higher hopes for McMahon with the Eagles than
I'll Keegan. Get to that with McMahon in terms of the position you expect him to play. I actually think Keegan, you're getting your Suo Opeta here, right? You're getting your backup guard. If you start 3 years on Michigan's offensive line, that says something to me, right? I didn't do a lot of work on the day three guards, but I like the profile. I think if you're just expecting like a solid backup with... Now, the one thing, and this goes to your criticism of Fuega, when Howie spoke about him both to us and then on the call, the term Howie used is mentality. Right.
And well, in the fifth round, that's different than in the first round.
No, you know,
it shouldn't be a differentiating factor at the top of the draft. But I think that's fine.
But that's like, I think, you know, they see someone who has like that Michigan nastiness on the offensive line. But the other part, too, is you hear this a lot with Alabama players that they're coached up by the time you get them. right? And it's someone who starts 3 years at Michigan,
yeah,
is probably coached up by the time you get him.
Yeah.
Like Stoutland's not working his magic on Keegan.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know that there's too much upside left for Trevor Keegan, and this is like a philosophical thing, like on day three, is it a good bet to take a guy who is a known commodity from a big school, especially at guard, where it tends to be kind of a different profile? Sometimes guys can come from non-Power 5 schools. It's part of the reason I don't love the pick, but at the same time, you know, Jeff Stoutland, I'm sure, is picking which offensive lineman they're taking in this range, and I guess who am I to doubt him? But I would have liked a more traitsy player here than Keegan.
Well, your traitsy player came in the sixth round.
That's right. Sixth round, last two picks, Johnny Wilson, again, another player that they were linked to throughout the pre-draft process, and then Dylan McMahon, the NC State interior offensive lineman, had the great short shuttle, which you love from an offensive lineman. Johnny Wilson goes 185 overall versus 105 on the consensus big board, so another quote-unquote steal for the Eagles, and then McMahon goes 190, and he was 224 on the consensus big board. So just very quickly, in terms of whether the Eagles took guys versus value on the consensus big board, five of them were, four of them were quote-unquote reaches.
Yeah, so this is my bid on Johnny Wilson, because he's someone who I think people are saying, wow, they might have gotten a steal here, right? And this goes to the Cooper DeJean question that you had for me. If you have a 6'6", 235-pound receiver who ran a 4.52, who went to Florida State and Arizona before that, who had, you know, 17 yards reception in his career, and he's there, like, it's not like the Eagles discovered Johnny Wilson, right? So the league, the comparison was made to Marquise Colston. Marquise Colston went to Hofstra. Like, I don't want to say the Saints discovered him, but he was not someone who, there were more questions there. Johnny Wilson was on an offense that was on that everyone knew about. Everyone knew about Johnny Wilson. So the fact that he's there in the sixth round makes you wonder, like, you didn't necessarily outsmart the league with Johnny Wilson. But if you just talk about traits, I mean, there's a lot to work with there.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, all of these day three picks, you know, Nate Gary was a good pick by the Eagles, a fifth-round linebacker who you know, you didn't love when he was on the field, but he started, you know, for two seasons, basically. For all of these guys, if they turn into contributors on the team. Now, Howie Roseman said the thing on Saturday night that, like, we're not drafting these guys to be contributors. Like, we draft guys because we see starting upside. That's the whole point. Like, we can find special teamers later. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. But if between Will Shipley, Aeneas Smith, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., Trevor Keegan, Johnny Wilson, and Dylan McMahon, two of them turn into starters, that's a home run.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to be realistic about it. And I think the process over the course of the weekend was really, really good.
I agree with you there. And it's a situation, you know, I think back to, like, Jacoby Stevens was someone when we talked about that pick coming out of the draft. You say, all right, I can see the upside here, right? A contributing player, the national champion, has speed. You're moving him to linebacker. And they got him to camp, and they saw that he wasn't someone who was going to contribute on the team. He didn't make the 53, right? And so with these guys, you certainly don't want to overstate it. What you're trying to do is you're trying to make informed bets. And I think in a lot of these cases, you can understand the bet they were making. It's different for Jalen Hunt. It's different in the third round. But when you get to Johnny Wilson, when you get to Dylan McMahon, you're looking for a trait. You're looking for something that makes you think they can stick around.
I think Johnny Wilson, a good name for just like a made-up person. Like, you're going to get my Johnny Wilson in here. Like,
fair enough.
Johnny Wilsons don't come around every day.
It's like Bill Belichick used to say, like, Johnny Foxborough, I think.
Oh, there you go.
For the quarterback.
I like Joe Person.
Joe Person's a good guy.
Joe Person's a great guy. Great dinner companion.
Ah, flex.
You were at the same dinner with Joe Person.
I'm just saying, flex, yeah. Okay. Sell me real quick on McMahon.
Well, just from a guy that I want to get into Stoutland University, as it's called, because of the short shuttle and the athletic testing, you know, he's a little bit undersized at 6'3", 299. He has played both guard positions, so you know he's got the theoretical versatility, but I think with that body type, he's a center only here.
Sure, exactly.
I think there's real upside here. You know, a lot of starting experience, that the tools in his body, quote unquote. He's just a guy who I'm excited to see with Stoutland, maybe what he can do with him.
Sure. And I don't want to make the Jason Kelce comp, although I suppose I'm giving you this, is that picked one pick apart from Jason Kelce. He had the athletic testing that makes you think about Jason Kelce, certainly in terms of the short shuttle. And then also, here's a little nugget. He's co-represented by Jason Kelce's agent.
Co-represented?
Yes, there are two agents there. Yeah.
Dylan McMahon's so good he needs two agents?
there's two agents on the listing. I always go through the draft picks and look at the agents. And Jason Bernstein's one of them.
So overall, these nine picks, what do you give the process of the weekend for the Eagles from a draft grade standpoint?
Oh, I give the process an A. It's hard. Look, I start teaching in 2 weeks. Mm. I should know the differences between an A and a B, right? But I think Howie did a great job this draft. I don't think there were. I would have liked them to come out of it with better help on the offensive line. We talked about that on the top of the show. But I think a huge part of this is getting that third, fourth, and fifth next year. They are operating from a pick deficit. The fact that they were able to trade a fourth for a third, which they were on the other side of that deal last year with Ringo, but they only get that fourth because they trade back in the third round. I thought Howie navigated that really well. He traded up when he needed to. He traded back when he could have. He stayed put in an appropriate way. So I give Howie a lot of credit. And Howie kind of talks about how experience is a great teacher. I do think, like, the more he's done this, you can see he has a sense of how to navigate a draft.
Super chat from Zach wants to know where the Zach banner is. It's in the next room, rolled up and folded away nicely. But hopefully we're going to get the Zach banner T-shirt headed your way soon on the PHL.
I thought that question
you can become a diehard.
Yeah. I thought that question when I first saw it, I'm not being facetious here, was where's Zach Banner, like the former offensive tackle from the Pittsburgh Steelers? And I was like, they're bringing in Becton. You want Banner too? So
there you go. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the PHLY Eagles podcast. A little programming note. We are at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, not at noon. So we look forward to that. Going to talk some shadow draft and some other things going on with the Eagles. Maybe get into the undrafted guys on Wednesday. And then Wednesday and Thursday, both at noon. No show on Friday this week. So Julia deserves the time off. What are we talking about? All right. That'll do it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For all of us here at PHLY, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And as always, we love you. Y'all silly like the mayor.